This is the Home Tech Podcast Show, number 71, recorded on May 3rd, 2012. I am your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a stormy tonight, stormy Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week with world-class show notes out at TheAverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at TheAverageGuy.tv. Track me down on Twitter, just at Jay Carlson. Follow the show schedule on a new Twitter account over at TheAverageGuyTV, all one word. Kind of want to know what's going on with the show, when the shows are getting scheduled. We moved the show back an hour this week. We're now, for the summer, starting at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. So all that stuff you can know if you follow the Twitter account. It's just The Average Guy TV. We also have all the links you could ever want or ever need to automatically download the stream or stream this podcast to iTunes or Zune or Stitcher or many of the other podcatchers available right on the front page of TheAverageGuy.tv. Find us on Facebook by searching The Average Guy Podcast, or leave some comments out there. Of course, leaving comments on iTunes is always appreciated as well. That improves our search rankings. All right, we took last week off, and it was nice paid vacation for you and Christian. Andrew, good to be back, and how are you, Andrew Morris?
I'm exceptionally well, and it's exceptionally cold in Melbourne. We've hit single-figure temperatures this
really?
Week, so yeah, it's rather inhospitable at the moment.
It's kind of unusual.
That's Celsius, though.
Yeah, yesterday I got to like 7.
So 7 would be like in the 40s, I think, for Fahrenheit.
14 and 32.
Still cold.
All right. So, well, you got it pretty good there in Melbourne. And did you enjoy your week off? Did you do anything exciting while you weren't podcasting?
I had a stellar week. I went to work for a change. I had to go in the office. We've got some pretty key work going on at the moment. So went in to get with some of my guys to make sure that we're going to deliver a particular milestone.
Oh, that's good. And you have to say that because they pay you too, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Also with us tonight and filling in for Christian, and the next best thing to be in there is Gary Johnson. Gary, how are you doing?
Just fine, thanks.
Awesome. Good to have you. What have you been up to? We haven't seen you in 3 or 4 weeks. What you been up to?
Oh, nothing exciting too much. Just the same old stuff. Did a little bit of research for tonight's show and got a pretty good lineup on cloud drive storage facilities and stuff that. So that'll be fun to go through.
Big news. Yeah. We talked about that quite a bit last night on the home server show, but a lot of good stuff going on out there. And then special guest tonight, we get him back about every 7 or 8 weeks. Of course, it's Chris Lux. Chris, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's always good to have you. You got some big news that folks who follow you, and I know there are those who like to hear you. You're moving, not for a while, but you got a move planned?
I did, yeah. So I went through the National Match program, and I've just been interviewing for the past few months for hematology oncology programs, and found out yesterday at 11 o'clock that I'll be heading to Seattle to work at Seattle Children's Hospital and the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center starting the summer of 2013.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
Congratulations as well. Seattle is a great town, and I think you're gonna love it there. I'll be honest with you.
I think so. I'm kind of an outdoorsy guy. You know, there's a little bit of geek lore that goes along with that area of the country, and as long as they have a good internet connection, I guess I'll be happy.
Yeah. So, well, and a lot of good tech there as well. I mean,
yeah.
You know, being the home
I think
of
that's
Microsoft.
There. I think, you know, getting, you know, the mountain bike, I'll actually have mountains to ride on instead of, you know, riding around streets in St. Louis. And I think I'll get out in the kayak once in a while. And so any of you guys are welcome to come visit sometime.
Kayak. Speaking of kayaks, Andrew, you've got a new kayak, right?
Yeah, we've got a couple of kayaks. We've got the we spoken about them a while back. We've got the Hobie kayaks, so the pedal and paddle. So
you could just jump in, you know, and make your way over to Seattle, right? I mean, wouldn't be that far.
To kayak.
Well, that's it. If I followed the Google directions on how to get to Seattle, I'm sure it'll tell me to get to Sydney and then start paddling. So
yeah. So you know, you could just. I'm sure there's a current that would get you there in a month or three.
Yeah, it'll be like the what was the name of that boat that the guy went across the ocean in, that stupid thing that he made out of logs? The Contiki.
Really?
Thor Heyerdahl.
Say it again, Gary.
Thor Heyerdahl.
Yeah, Thor Heyerdahl and the Contiki.
Contiki, that was out of bamboo reeds or something like that.
Yep. nearly died a bunch of times, and it was a great book. So,
well, Chris, we'll look forward to getting out to Seattle. I think that'll give me a little incentive to actually go out to the MVP, the Microsoft MVP conference that they do in the spring. Next spring, you won't be there yet, but maybe the spring of 2014. But
Jim, if any of your listeners want to help me move, I'm happy for the help. So,
all right, well, yeah,
send them my way.
I'll expense paid trip to Seattle, right? If anybody who helps you move,
yeah. I will at least buy lunch.
As long as you're willing to drive the U-Haul. It looks like we probably should do a Midwest meetup one more time then while you're still in St. Louis.
Now we've got Dave McCabe moving to Indianapolis, so it may have to be an Indy meetup this time.
I know.
So.
That'd be cool to get together in Indianapolis. I'd be all in for that. Well, guys, welcome to the show. Good to have you. Again, we took 2 weeks off, so if you're wondering where the heck the feed went last week, I was out of town. And I have done a bunch of shows in a row, and I thought it'd be great to just give it some time off. While I was gone, I was in Vegas last week for Oracle's Collaborate 2012 conference. That's kind of the national user group conference for folks who use Oracle software. I actually got a chance to hang out with Greg and or Welch Works, as he's known in the Home Server Show forums. Greg lives out there in the Vegas area, and we got a chance to meet up. Funny story. So, you know, we've been struggling with the broadcast server. That's the PC that I use to broadcast the podcast every single week. And when I put this new server in, and we were using Google Plus for the broadcast, I get these clicks and these weird sounds in there. We could really not isolate it down to anything, although it does sound like the hard drive is struggling to keep up with everything that we have it doing. I know Google Plus takes more resources than Skype, so it was a great excuse to go ahead and pick up an SSD drive and give that a try to install in there. So the funny thing isn't that I bought the SSD drive. The funny thing is that I met Greg and we went over to Fry's, and so I'm in. You know, Vegas has a huge Fry's store. I mean, it's like Walmart size, all electronics, right? So we're walking around. I said, "Hey, let's go over and look at the SSDs." So we walk over there, and I was looking at the prices, not really all that much better than I would find, you know, at a Best Buy, really. And I thought, I was expecting, you know, some deals and, you know, some other stuff there at Fry's. So, you know, kind of like our Micro Center experience, Chris, when we went to.
Yeah.
Right. I was kind of expecting a little bit better out of Fry's. So, So I'm talking to Greg, and he said, "Hey, I think – he goes, have you checked out Newegg had a special?" So I pull out my phone. I'm in Fry's looking at the SSD drive. So I pull out my phone, go to Newegg, find this 120-gig drive for $115. And it's 8-2. We're great with the PC that I got. Right there in the store, on the floor, I buy the drive. It gets delivered to my house. I just thought it's ironic that it would be in Fry's buying from Newegg.
Is this your first SSD?
No, this will be the second. Studio PC, the one I'm using right now to run all the camera and the microphone and all that stuff. That's already SSD. And really, I can't. I'm totally addicted to the reboot experience as well as the speed enhancements that come with SSD. And I've always told Sarah, she's listening tonight. I've always told Sarah, whenever her PC gets to the point, her laptop gets to the point that she can't stand it from a speed perspective, we're going to get an SSD and drop that in her laptop and upgrade that. I remember a couple months ago, 60 gig drives were 60. It was a little over $1.50 a gig, and now we're starting to see the 120 gig drives come out at about $100. So it's gone below the dollar a gig threshold, and I think that price is just going to continue to drop. We've talked a lot about that here on the show, so no need to rehash that. But I had a buddy come over with his laptop. Of course, you know, we're all tech support for our friends, right? And his hard drive, when I pulled it out of the laptop and plugged it into my I have one of those little docking stations, you could hear it grind, right? So I said, "Yeah, your drive is done." You know, and he said, "Oh, my data's backed up." I'm like, "Well, that's good." I said, "But it's probably time for an SSD."
Yeah.
So, you know, with 120 gig or more, I really feel like you can put a person in a position to put the drive in, and the average user will use it as long as you say, look, you can't store absolutely everything on this drive. You're going to have to move some of it off to external storage. And he was very good about that. Came over the next week and I helped him get Windows on it. And that thing it reboots in about 10 seconds. Which was just dynamite. So two SSD stories. I always encourage folks. Chris, you've got SSDs and anything you got?
My desktop and my home theater PC have SSDs in them. I've considered putting one in my laptop, but it's pretty fast anyway, so I'm not really concerned about upgrading that. But definitely like the experience on the desktops.
You know, I'm kind of interested. Put Windows 8, the consumer preview on the HP. I've got an HP DM1, and it boots way faster now with Windows 8.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you, I had Windows 8 on a spinning disk on my home theater PC, and even there, it boots in 10, 11 seconds. I think it does a little bit different setup where it actually stores kind of an image of the startup in memory so that it's just ready to boot right away, and then it does some stuff in the background. It boots tremendously faster, even on a spinning disk.
I was going to say that HP DM1, that's a spinner. I mean, that's a 160 gig spinner that's on there. Not a particularly fast. Andrew, that's probably, a 5400 RPM drive?
Yeah, I think they shipped them with a 5400 RPM drive, yeah.
Yeah, 3 gig of RAM. It's got the E350 processor. So we're talking bottom of the food chain from a resourcing standpoint. And that Windows 8 image boots just so fast on that.
Yeah.
And I've heard some folks complain about, how do you get rid of the splash screen? You just hit the up arrow and sign in, and it works really well. Gary, are you, you got any SSDs in your systems there? Have you made them?
I've got one in my desktop that's almost like useless because I got so much on my hard drive that getting it converted over to boot the SSD and run off of that is a chore I haven't been willing to tackle yet, but I'll eventually get there. That's got a 256 gigabyte Crucial M4 in it, and it, when I do boot it up, I dual boot the system right now. When I do boot it up and work off the SSD, it is lightning quick, 30 seconds and I'm up and running. I've also got one up in my media center PC upstairs, and I was testing some changes I made because I had some problems with DNS on the domain controller, so I made some changes and wanted to make sure that I was getting good throughput on the LAN. So I did a couple of LAN tests and one to my RAID storage, which is a 8-drive, 50 RAID 50 storage array.
Your average and home did, user's
yeah,
server,
the average
right?
guy, yeah.
No.
In the basement. And the other LAN test I did was to the SSD upstairs in the media center. And they both, are you ready for this? LAN transfer now, dumping a dummy file and reading it back to both systems, 850 megabytes per second.
That's
up
kind of
and down. I was like, yes, really, really fast.
That needs to be followed by a Tim Taylor, laugh from Home Improvement.
I hadn't thought of that in forever.
Wow. More power.
That's right.
Andrew, are you?
Yeah, they're smoking.
What are you running any SSDs in your home stuff?
No, all my stuff is still spindle drive, so I'm still pretty much in the dark ages with what I use. I'm still using a Dell Latitude laptop with a Centrino 1.6 gig processor in it. So,
Andrew, did your hard drive spin the other direction?
Probably.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I know I'm still using a real old machine. I run Linux, so it's just as fast on that. So
yeah, whatever works. I mean, it's not always a matter of. I'm always trying to improve or upgrade the podcasting machines, to get the right throughput. The Procaster, the software from Livestream, requires it really wants a Core i7 processor, and I'm running a Core i3. So that's what it says it recommends. So I'm hoping this SSD will speed things up, and I'm hoping next week we'll be back on Google+. So good stuff. Well, it's been a busy week. Speaking of storage and hard drives, it's been a busy week for cloud storage announcements, and there's been a lot of things going on. This has kind of been in the top of everybody's, at least late last week it was, the top of everybody's news readers. Google announced a new drive, and Microsoft announced the opening or a desktop application for their SkyDrive. And then followed up by Amazon, kind of introducing a new desktop app, or at least some integration with the cloud, Amazon Cloud Storage. And so we talked a little bit about this last night at homeservershow.com on the show, but I want to throw it out to you guys a little bit. Andrew, I know you'd put it in the notes here first, that Google Docs and now really becomes G Drive, and a little install makes that possible. Have you been out? Have you tried your Google Drive yet? And are you all set up on it?
Yeah, I've had a play with it. I installed the sync software, and I probably gave it 3 or 4 hours of messing with it, and then uninstalled it. From my perspective, I was reasonably unimpressed with it. I was expecting it to actually sync the Google content down to the PC, whereas what I experienced is it synchronized down a bunch of shortcuts back out to what we would have formerly known as Google Docs. So on the PC, the experience wasn't great. On the Android tablet, on the other hand, it's fantastic. So on the Android tablet, which here's one I prepared earlier.
Nice.
You can you fire up the. Let me see if I can get it here. You fire up Google Drive. It gives you a list. You then go in. You can see the edits happening in real time. You can edit in real time. Save, and it works really, really nicely.
Tilt that a little bit flatter on the screen. Let's see if we can see it better. I'm just getting the bright. Oh, there you. Right there. Awesome.
Yeah, so with the Android tablet, it works really nicely, but for mine, it's not so great with the PC component. But you know, it's a first release, so I think it's just a matter of time before they get it a bit better.
Yeah, I did notice that it also only syncs down documents, or at least gives you the shortcuts for documents that you own. So we all share documents, and so if Andrew, if you had created show notes for this show and own the document, I would not be able to see that document in my Windows Explorer on my desktop. I'd have to go to the actual web, the web face or interface for it to get it.
Chris, do you think that's so you don't have multiple people editing offline?
I don't know. And there is an offline mode associated with it. You can say sync these, or they have. There's some beta software or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Beta service that will allow you to sync those. And Andrew, I think if you enable that, and I have not enabled that yet, but I think if you enable that, it will download those docs to you locally. Yeah, I think I'd have to give that a try.
I'd have to spend a bit more time with the client. I didn't actually see an option that enabled that. So
I do like the fact that it enables a drive in your Windows Explorer. You know, and you see that as a physical kind of folder on your desktop. I do like that. One of the things I didn't feel real comfortable with, and which I felt very comfortable with SkyDrive, and we'll talk about that here in a second, was I didn't move any folders or any files to it. I for whatever reason, I'm not super excited, and I don't have any good reason. It just doesn't seem, it doesn't feel right for me to move files to the G Drive, and I don't know why.
A little bit of apprehension at the moment.
Yeah, and nothing rational. It just doesn't feel like, as compared to SkyDrive, which of course is, you know, Microsoft's cloud based storage. I got 25 gig free of that because I had files on there. You know, let's talk about that real quick. So SkyDrive was announced out there with a desktop. I mean, it's been out there a while, but it had terrible integration from the desktop. They launched an app, desktop app for it that gave you very tight integration now between Windows 7 and SkyDrive, especially from a Windows Explorer standpoint, and really just treats it like another folder. Now, it does sync to every PC. It's like Dropbox from that standpoint, but it does sync to every PC by default that you have the app installed on. But for some reason, I was really comfortable, and maybe it's because I'm just comfortable with my files being in a Microsoft file system, right, whatever. And so I have no problems moving my files onto the SkyDrive, but I was, and I don't want to say I'm apprehensive. I just didn't think about moving files onto the G Drive.
Yeah, I haven't thought about doing that, to be honest. I've only considered it as a method of accessing what I've currently got there, being my online documents.
Gary, did you try either offering with
Know, it is just so fortuitous that I did all my show prep yesterday, and the subject of my show prep was cloud-based free storage.
Yeah, so yeah.
Well, I'm having a little trouble cutting and pasting the show docs, and I don't know to the show notes.
Yeah, I see it in there, but
because I got a bunch of links that are really good reads, and let me just get to my screen notes here. The first one is an article on Tech Republic, and it's really anybody who's thinking the Google path, which I'm sure is going to be a very major player, of course, should really read this. What they're suggesting is that everybody carefully read the terms of service. And because in the terms of service, there's a key section in there that says, when you upload or otherwise submit content to our services, you give Google and those we work with a worldwide license to use, host, store, reproduce, modify, create the derivative works, such as those resulting from translations, adaptations, other changes, and so on, communicate, publish, publicly perform, publicly display, and distribute such content. The wow. rights you grant in this license are for the limited purpose of operating, promoting, and improving our services and to develop new ones. So basically, anything that you put on the Google Drive setup, you don't own. You basically surrender any sort of privacy or copyright rights whatsoever. I mean,
did they really say it's to make our service better?
That's the language that they're using.
Wow.
Well, you know, I think it's, and to be fair to Google, right? It's they have unified their privacy and EULA agreements across all their platforms. And I do think it's probably the result of an over-aggressive legal department trying to cover themselves for
it's a CYA clause.
Yeah, just for just about anything. Now,
but you know, basically, if you're, you know, let's just say you're a blogger on a news site and you're posting your notes on Google Drive, there's no expectation of privacy that somebody can't scoop that material, read it, and repost it somewhere and just say, well, yeah, it says right in the agreement that, you know, we have
let's think about this from, I know that's possible, but let's think about it from Google's perspective. What would it be in their best interest to allow something like that to happen, right? I mean, if they want to be a storage company, eventually they want to sell this storage, right? I mean, it's available. They want to make a little bit of money off this. Do they really want the people to know that your privacy is in jeopardy for these things? You know what I'm saying?
I tend to agree with you, Jim, but the problem is that you're reading an agreement that's written today that you're hoping anticipates an environment that you're going to be in the future and protects you. And there's no guarantee of that. Because it's in Google's best interest not to divulge or abuse this clause at the present, doesn't mean that necessarily the situation may not change and there may be an opportunity Sure. for them to find or foresee a circumstance within which they could abuse the rights that they have under this. And I myself, I'm skeptical to begin with, and I'm certainly not going to post anything on some site that basically tells me I have no privacy rights.
Sure.
And by contrast, the SkyDrive terms of service is just the opposite. Except for material that we license to you, we don't claim ownership or the content you provide on the service. We don't claim ownership of the content you provide on the service. So they're saying right there that you own it.
Right.
Your content right. remains your content. We also don't control, verify, or endorse the content that you or others make available on the service. So like I say, it's you understand that Microsoft may need, and you hereby grant Microsoft the right to use, modify, adapt, reproduce, distribute, and display content posted on the service solely to the extent necessary to provide the service. So they're very limiting in their terminology and basically saying that you own it. It's your stuff.
And, and doesn't that, I mean, that kind of makes sense from a company maturity perspective, right? So you have Microsoft, who's been in the enterprise space for, you know, the last 20 years, has grown into it and matured as an organization and understands that if you're going to have people use these services, you've got to give some kind of privacy to it. And then you have Google, who doesn't, I mean, they're kind of the Wild West of some of this stuff where it's like, and they're getting better. They're maturing at Google. I mean, there's a lot, they made a lot of changes just in the last 2 years around these things. But it's kind of a, maybe it's a rookie mistake, you know, to from a Google perspective to say, okay, we're basically going to cover ourselves in any way by giving this incredibly relaxed EULA for us. And nobody will read it, right? I mean, that's – I don't know.
But they know people are going to read it. Microsoft goes after them all the time for their evil practices and things. So.
And surprisingly, I did a little more research, and Dropbox is basically the same as Google. Oh. By submitting your stuff to the services, you grant us and those we work with to provide the services worldwide, non-exclusive, royalty-free, sub-license rights to use, copy, distribute, prepare derivative works – such as translation or format conversions, or perform or publicly display that stuff to the extent reasonably necessary for the service. So then again, you got to define, well, what's necessary for the service.
Yeah.
And that's what everything hinges on. But basically, they're telling you, you really don't have any privacy rights. So I would put Google and Dropbox in that same category of don't put anything on there that you really want to have an expectation of privacy or copyright or whatever, because you're basically surrendering those rights in a legal sense when you deposit them on those services. And SkyDrive, conversely, appears to be, you know, endorsing your right that the content is yours. So I'm much more comfortable with the SkyDrive service. So actually, I frequent a bulletin board for Subsonic quite often. And one of the things that I never did figure out quite entirely was depositing an image in a post. And I said, yeah, I know I got to have a Dropbox or a Google Drive or a SkyDrive. So one of the things that I did was I installed both the Dropbox and the SkyDrive desktop links so that, like you were saying, they show up in Explorer and they work terrific. It's just like seeing another drive on your system. And the SkyDrive version is a little obtuse for creating the right link to show it. And it's strange when you right click on the link in the SkyDrive, actually you have to go to the website. So what you have to do is you got to log on to the SkyDrive site, open up your public file folder, and then when you right click, you get a screen, and contrary to your instincts where it has embed and properties and things like that, you have to click on View Original, and when you click on that, it brings that image up in your browser, and then you can copy that link in your address bar and then put that into the forum post in between the URL tags. And then your image will show up. So took me a little digging to find that. But yes, it's just as easy to drop an image from SkyDrive as it is from Dropbox.
So Chris, you haven't weighed in on this. And so, Gary, thanks for confirming my fear of moving data onto Google. I didn't know why I was afraid.
Not that you were paranoid to start with.
No, I had no idea the security policy. But Chris, what are you using? Are you using any of those? Did you go out and try the apps?
Not so much yet. I mean, I have the SkyDrive app on my Windows phone, and I've used SkyDrive for a while. I used it a lot when I was doing using LiveWriter to do my blog in Africa, where it was just a good place to put the pictures, and then LiveWriter was really nicely integrated with that. So I have some folders of pictures in there. But yeah, for years it's been very, very limited, very hard to access. And they've kind of promised all along that there were going to be more features coming. And it looks like we're starting to see that in a pretty serious way. It's obvious from Windows 8 that they're going to integrate SkyDrive into it pretty deeply. So you're not going to have apps and things running everywhere. Your files are just going to be kind of natively supported in the music and photos and documents, apps, and things like that. The Windows Phone stores any documents that you make on it, so Word documents, Excel documents, and things, straight to the SkyDrive, and you can read them off of there. So, I probably engage with SkyDrive quite a bit.
Did you go out and claim your 25 gig of space?
I did. Okay. I did, and that was kind of a nice bonus. But that was one of the things I was going to throw out to you guys was how much space do you actually want or need on one of these services? So, I the biggest place I use for the cloud is CrashPlan, where I pay them a monthly fee to be able to upload an unlimited amount. But that's really for cloud backup. And I feel like the SkyDrive and the Google and Amazon and all these things are trying to set up more of your active documents, the things that you're working with, your music, your pictures, your documents. And I know for SkyDrive, you can pay in increments all the way up to 100 gigs on top of your 25. So 125 would be your max. And that almost covers me. I'm probably a little closer to about 160, 175 that would cover all of my music, all of my pictures, all of my documents. And then I would kind of be done with the cloud backup on other services. So if they would go like one more increment, if I could pay them $100 a year instead of $50 a year and get 200 gigs, I think I'd be considering switching over to that.
Well, but couldn't you, Chris, we talked last night about this, couldn't you split them up? And this is kind of where I'm at, right? So, for example, I'm really comfortable with my documents in SkyDrive just because Microsoft's a document company, right? They're good at the metadata part of it. They're good at storing documents. So say I only have the 7 gig that comes free on the SkyDrive.
Right.
Most people, I mean, getting 7 gig of documents is difficult. So I might store my documents there. I might store my music at Amazon because that's where I buy it. And it automatically, every time I buy it, it automatically stores the copy.
Oh, I see. Use different services for each thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I can get up to 20 gig of music storage at Amazon if I just buy an album a year, right? Which I do at some point. And so, and it's $20 to buy 20 gig or something like that.
But I guess
that,
the question is, down the line, you're going to want to access these things from one place. And so, Andrew's able to get his music.
Will I really need to get it from one place? I mean, when I'm on my phone.
On a computer. But on your phone. Okay. Sure. Is your phone going to go to SkyDrive and Google?
Well, when I'm going to listen to my music, I'm going to go to the music app, the Amazon music app.
Exist for Windows Phone.
But. Shoot. Well, okay. So. I'm in an Android ecosystem, right?
Right.
At this point. When I want to get my documents, I'm going to pull those from SkyDrive from an app on my Android phone.
And SkyDrive's being smart too, that they're putting their tendrils out to all the different groups. They're going to be on iOS. They're going to be on Android. They're going to be on the Mac OS. So they're being pretty smart in how they do this. It sounds like that's going to happen with their new music offering as well, that there's going to be an Android and an iOS app for their new music service. At least that's the rumbling that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. So I think they're being smarter about realizing that people are using multiple different devices and wanting to get access. And so all of these services should play well with everyone else. The problem is in the phone market, Microsoft is the small kid in the room. And so Google is not likely to make a Windows Phone app anytime soon, and same with iOS.
Gary, I saw you jump when Chris said that. What did he spark something? I mean, you can't, right? I mean, you host a Subsonic, and you guys, you and Christian store quite a bit of data, so. The idea of you moving your local storage completely into the cloud is probably a little bit absurd, but from a let's not talk about that piece, because we know that's not realistic for somebody to move all their video to the cloud, right? Those right. are still pretty large, and you probably have, you know, a terabyte or two or something of that kind of storage. But from an average guy perspective, if you were storing your music, your documents, do you think you could spread that around into the right places and take advantage of all the free stuff and not have to buy anything?
Yeah, probably. And again, for me, it's always been, I mean, we talked about this probably more than a year ago. I mean, it's I think the average guy, it's really incumbent upon himself to really do some research and understand the benefits, the drawbacks, and the pitfalls of cloud storage, and really decide whether you want exposure in the cloud and to what extent. And whether or not, you know, you can build your own private cloud at a reasonable cost to where it can serve your needs. So for me, 25 gigabytes of storage on SkyDrive is plenty. And that's mostly because I have enough in-house storage,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I can access it from outside. So for the guy who's got, and it's really a question of understanding your own hardware and your own strategy and your own capabilities. But anybody who has more than 25 gigabytes of music is already storing it somewhere locally or right. on another service. So squeezing it onto SkyDrive probably doesn't make a lot of sense. For me, it's a parking spot for things that I want to make publicly available out on the web.
Sure. Like a Dropbox. But you're going to make public anyways. And so the privacy issues are really irrelevant, because you're making them private anyway. I mean, you're making them public anyways, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, so yeah, that makes sense.
And then the other thing is that, and I've so many guys even here locally that I've said, well, did you buy a new PC recently? Yeah. Well, what'd you do with the old one? Well, it's sitting over here. Well, all right, let's throw Windows Home Server on it, and now you can have your own little private cloud. Go out and buy a 1 terabyte drive for $100. There you go. You got a terabyte of storage that you can access from anywhere on the internet.
Right.
Yeah, although that private cloud.
Although you know better than I that that little ecosystem takes a little bit more maintenance than that. But Andrew, let me ask you this question. You're the overseas guy, and you're the one who always says, "Oh, bandwidth caps and not available in Australia." Of all these cloud services now, what's available to you there, and you planning to take advantage of any of them?
Look, all three of the ones we've just spoken about, so, you know, Google Drive, Dropbox and SkyDrive are all available. I'm a fairly big Dropbox user, so I share one between home and work, home and Michelle, myself and a whole bunch of mates, you know, for, you know, one good example, I guess, is the Android release for the HP touchpad, you know. One of us will download it, throw it into a Dropbox share, and then we all access it from there. So there's about 10 of us subscribed to one folder there.
You've got one with me.
Yeah, I've got one with you, yeah. And I think I've got one with Chris as well. So, you know, it's convenient and it works very well, Dropbox, the way it is at the moment. What I see with Google Drive is it's got the potential to do the same thing and potentially better, given the distributed nature of Google's infrastructure. I haven't looked at SkyDrive enough to know whether it would do what I need it to do or not.
Okay.
And the other one, of course, is Box.net, but they don't have a terribly good PC client.
Yeah, not yet. I imagine they're going to race to catch up. And are they 5 gig free or 25 gig free? I know you use them because 50. Of the touchpad. Right, they gave you 50 gig. I think that's what I have out there too.
Yeah, and I think I've logged into it once, I think.
Yeah, well, it's limited because you just don't. I mean, I think the desktop integration, especially for backup, is the most important piece. You need to be able to send things to it fairly easily.
Oh,
and,
exactly.
And so that that makes a big difference in the implementation.
And look, the way I integrate with Dropbox a couple of ways. on my home machine, I've got a couple of folders that I sync, and I sync them using a batch file that runs as the machine boots. So it shoots a whole bunch of files over into a shared folder that then get pushed out to Dropbox. So I've got multiple copies. So I've got two copies, being one in the cloud and one on the local machine in sync. But then there are other folders that I only keep in Dropbox as well.
Yeah. Well, I guess the point, the point is now, I mean, there's some serious cloud storage available. If you were a previous Microsoft SkyDrive user, you get 25. If you weren't, you get 7. Everybody else is offering 5. Dropbox has recently doubled their offering from 2 to 4, and then you get half a gig per referral. And I think I'm up to 5 or 6 gig at this point on Dropbox. And a free user can upgrade up, I think, up to 16 gig now. I think it's 16 gig. It is the max you can earn through referrals. But 16 gig is a lot when you think about that. I mean, I guess the day of cloud storage has come. And we've been talking about this for a long time. Chris, you and I, as Home Server Show guys, have you know, talked about backing things up to the cloud. But the day when enough of it's out there to actually use and to be used, I think is here. I mean, it's
definitely still in its infancy. I think there's definitely still usability issues. I think there's definitely no one's won the race yet. But I think a lot of that's going to come with expanded ways to access, you know, that we're going to see more of it on mobile phones, more of it on tablets, more of it in different places. And, you know, we're going to see a model emerge out of this. But yeah, it is nice. The idea that we've had for a long time of getting the majority of your stuff kind of up and accessible elsewhere is really coming true, and not behind firewalls, not stuck in your apartment or your house, you know, and having to spend days and days and hours figuring out how to get it out to the world. It's just going to be out there.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, with these changes at Microsoft, Chris, have come some changes, and with the Windows 8 deployment coming up, we're going to see a new customer preview that becomes available the first week of June. Many of us have tried the consumer preview. So a new beta, so to speak, coming out from Microsoft. They're beginning to do some changes to their brands out there, and one in particular, you had mentioned that Microsoft maybe seemed to be killing off some of the programs that you use the most. What are you worried about in these changes?
I don't know how much it is worry and how much it is kind of wondering what's going to replace some of these things. I think there in the last few years have been these little things that pop up where you go, oh, this is great and exactly what I want. There's some little, you know, craft programming group at Microsoft who said, yeah, we're going to put this thing together. That's what we want, and put it out there. And a small number of us found we liked it. So things like, you know, obviously the Zune and the Zune software. So those of us that have the Zune software love it. Media Center. Hardly anybody uses it, but those who use it think it's a great way to consume things, especially television. I was talking about Live Writer earlier. We know that that's going away now. That's not going to be part of the Live Essentials anymore. And last year they killed off the live.com blog domain. So if you were blogging there, they shoved it over to WordPress and you were suddenly left out in the cold. All of us have the sense that Home Server is kind of vanishing and going away. I just heard today for the first time that Security Essentials is not necessarily being killed in Windows 8, but it's being wrapped up into Windows Defender, which Windows Defender always put a bad taste in my mouth. It was always kind of this like clunky behemoth, and they're like, no, we've basically taken the viral part of Security Essentials and shoved it into Defender, and it's going to be built into Windows. You don't have to install it. You don't have to force people to install it. So an example would be Media Center. We'll talk a little bit about what Microsoft's doing with that. But no matter how they pacify us this time around, it's clear that they're pulling it out and end-of-lifing it, that it's not going to go on in the future unless they release it to let people develop it, because they've not developed this version at all. This is the Windows 7 version extracted and repackaged for us to buy again. So I don't know. I think we're bound to see some great things come along with television, with music, with photo sharing, with blogging. I mean, these things are going to come up. But in the meantime, it's a little disconcerting to see all of our – or at least most of my favorites kind of being diminished.
Do you think, Chris, they're picking on the enthusiasts at this point? I sure get the feeling
that's kind of what my comment was, I'm not sure they really want us around so much. You know, it's like, we're not the easiest ones to please. We're not the easiest ones to support. We're pushing the extremes. We're trying to do things that are a little bit different. I mean, your average user doesn't record television and process images and record podcasts on a machine. They just don't do it. And so if they're looking at what's profitable, what do they want to blast out to the masses that's going to make a business just as happy as your grandmother, just as happy as, you know, some college kid, then they're going to strip out anything that's not important. And I think that's a good thing. But at the same time, some of these things are vanishing and there doesn't seem to be an easy way to replace them. So I'm hoping that they don't forget the enthusiast and that they allow us to keep having these little toys and things that we can snap in to make it a more complete experience. But if they're focusing on the average user, yeah, I think it makes some sense for them to rid themselves of all of the cruft and just kind of cut it down to a simple, easy to install, easy to understand operating system with almost nothing superfluous sitting there.
Mm. Well, and then they can rename themselves Apple.
Well, you know.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, I kind of feel what you're saying, and yet I think Microsoft should understand that without the enthusiast, they might not have as big a following in the general public as they have. That they might lose their whole crowd to Apple without the enthusiast support that we give to their average users.
No, because the cost basis is what's so different. I think we give support, and yes, there's something that they're gaining from having us around. But I don't think the reason people buy Microsoft machines is because it's the only kid on the block. It's because it's the most affordable and people know it. They're comfortable with it. So I don't know that would be the game changer necessarily. If anything, people would be like, oh, good, it's simpler now. I don't have to call. I mean, no offense to the four of us, but I don't think the people that call us about their computers necessarily want to call us about their computers. They would love to just figure it out themselves and not have to be supported by their geeky friends.
Yeah, I'd agree, Chris. In this case, I get the feeling that I'm reading Making Windows Media Center Available in Windows 8 on the Building Windows 8 blog at the MSDN over on Microsoft. And typically, this is Steven Sanofsky's blog post. He turned it over to somebody else to write it. But they further explain their Media Center plans, what they're going to do. Last week, they'd come out and said, hey, Media Center is coming out. It's only going to be available in Windows 8 Pro, and you're only going to get it if you buy it. That's kind of what they said. And all the Media Center folks went, what the? You know, are you kidding me? What are you trying to do to us? So they come out with an explanation. But reading between the lines in this blog post, I get this feeling as I read through this that they're saying, look, here's the deal. We have made an operating system that's still too complicated for the average guy.
That's right.
It's still too hard. Now, that's not us, right? And that's what I hear you saying. That's not us. We dig that, the complexity of it. We dig Media Center and setting up a TV tuner card and, you know, all the things that we do. But you know what? Nobody else, statistically, out of the 2 billion people that use, you know, Windows, they're not doing it. And what I hear Microsoft saying is we're sorry, but you guys are just too small of a group for it to make a difference. We are going to move in a direction to make this easier. So, you know, another example of that is they're discontinuing really support for Windows Media Player, right? A lot of you could listen to music and watch your DVDs. Microsoft pays a fee for a codec.
That's right.
For this in Windows 7 and versions going back. Microsoft says we're not going to pay for that anymore. We're going back to the XP days, sort of, and we're going to allow third-party vendors to create apps that have support for the DVD codecs. And you're going to buy that, and it's going to get licensed through some kind of app that's going to live on Windows 8, and we're going to take the complexity out of it. You don't need to know if you have a codec or not. You don't have to, right? We're going to let vendors take care of those or whatever. We're going to let apps take care of that for you. So on your Windows 8 tablet, when you want to watch a movie, you'll you'll use the media or the movie app or whatever. They right. also, he was also very, not careful, but they were also very blatant to say, look, 90%, I'm making that statistic up, but a good majority, I think is what they said, of consumers are now consuming through Netflix and Hulu and YouTube. And
right.
Why do you need a DVD codecs on your tablet? You're not gonna. So anyways, that's the direction. It's very, very clear in this post that Microsoft is really moving. And Gary, to your point, they're amplifying the OS. They're making it more simple. They're making it bulletproof. I'd give my mom an iPad to use and feel comfortable that she'd figure it out because it's easy. I think the Windows 8 tablet is going to need to be a similar experience. And she
That's a good point, but you know we're looking at the dominant music player in the industry is iTunes on a Mac OS that everybody seems to love, although I'm not a Mac guy, and the buzz is that Apple TV is going to be rolling out and going to revolutionize. So it's like Microsoft is just leaving the battlefield. It's kind of strange.
Well,
rather than making these apps more usable and simpler to use and less need of configuration, something that just goes in and works. It's just an example. I mean, they should give up. I've got Windows Media Center installed up in my HTPC, and it has this function where after it records a program, it's supposed to archive to my Windows home server. The only problem is, unless you realize and do about 3 days worth of research to find out that the recorded TV folder on your Windows home server doesn't have the right permission set to allow the home theater to archive, you get failure after failure after failure on this function in your Windows Media Center.
Yeah.
How in the deuce can a major company that says we design software
put out a
product like that absolute abjectly fails out of the box and has been that way since Windows XP and has not been fixed? So yeah, they should get out of the market. Don't compete. Be a corporate OS and a corporate setup and leave the poor consumer alone. Let them go to Apple and let them have more fun. And that's what they're saying.
Whoa.
And I agree with them because they're they're absolutely doing a terrible job with the stuff that they're imposing on the public, where you rack your brain day after day after day, and then you realize it ain't me.
Well, but Gary, isn't that, I mean, you're encapsulating the consumer experience to this point with Windows and why
right.
the average user is still very frustrated at times with the way Windows works. And I think the Windows team has seen that, oh my gosh, I mean, this iPad, this Apple ecosystem has come on very, very quickly and is now dominating in that space because it's so simple to use. Now, we complain about it at times because you can't do anything with it, right? We want more granularity. We want more complexity because we understand that. And so there is a nice play here from a Windows perspective to say, look, we're going to make Windows RT, which is a very basic version of Windows. It's going to work just like, I mean, it's going to be very simple and very limited what it can do, but the average user can use it. We're going to have Windows 8 that's still going to operate desktop PCs as long as those are around. And then we're going to have this version called Windows 8 Pro that's going to be for us. That's the version we're going to want. It's going to go on PCs. We're still going to build them. And so I don't think this is a bad strategy by Microsoft to get inroads back into the tablet market.
But you're still going to have a question of execution I don't think they're going to win more market share by trying to become more Apple-like. I think that the Apple users are not going to be convinced to switch over to Microsoft. And I think the people like you and I who are willing to put up with the nonsense and the bad design that Microsoft sometimes gets themselves into, we don't want to sacrifice our flexibility and our granularity just to use something that looks like an Apple machine.
You know, so I'm gonna jump in for a second, and I know we're comparing the idea of making something simpler to use and more user friendly as making it more like Apple, but I think there's also a difference in the approach they're taking, which is that they want to create something that spans all of their systems. They want to create something that's the same on their phone as it is on their Xbox, as it is on their tablet, as it is on their computers. They're trying to create something where the flexibility exists at different degrees for different systems. So if you're on a desktop, you have complete ability to add things and take them away. If you have something on a tablet, there's going to be some degree of flexibility of adding apps and things, but maybe not the full range of what you can get elsewhere. I think the ability to tinker and be creative and come up with new ideas and is going to still be there, and we're not losing that. But they're finding ways to keep some of the granular control of what we've had before in Windows and what we've come to enjoy from getting underneath the covers and figuring out what's underneath. We're still going to have some of that. But they're answering the question of how do we move past a very kind of stark graphic user interface of grids of icons? How do we move past that and help the average user still have an interest and get the benefit out of a PC or a tablet? So I don't see them converging on the same product. I see them both looking towards a similar need and demand of the customer, saying, listen, there are way too many things here that I don't necessarily need on a day-to-day basis. So I think there's a difference to what both places are doing.
Yeah. And Chris, I agree with you. You know, one of the interesting things, I've went full-time Windows 8 on my laptop. And mm-hmm. and this is the beta, right? I mean, it's the pre-beta for the most part. It is rough, but it works really, really well for the most mm-hmm. part. And I am convinced, and there's some new things coming. You know, they're adding more colors to the front page. The live tiles are going to be more live. I mean, the look and feel is going to be better than it was the way it is now, which a lot of people complained about. But, you know, I've mentioned this before. I sometimes want to grab that. I want to fold the keyboard back and grab that screen and treat it like a tablet. I am getting more and more excited about seeing Windows 8 on a tablet. And
sure.
And not be married to the desktop for some things. And I am excited about having some Active Directory integration with a tablet in an enterprise that's not a Mac product, and allow us to do some things in the enterprise with a tablet and that are integrated.
What I'm hearing you say is that there are things that you see being able to do eventually with a Microsoft-based tablet, both in your personal life and your work life, that you don't see being fulfilled by an iPad?
Well, you know, the iPad today works, but it's not fully integrated. I mean, the rights management and the security pieces of it are not there from a management standpoint. And I right. think in the enterprise, we've got to get better at security and some of those other pieces from an actual usability standpoint, from a security perspective. So
right.
yeah, we've got some ways to go on that. But
you know, the other piece that's exciting about this, and I think this is something that Apple paved the way with, was all of the OS has gotten to a rut where people trying to design software and create programs either had to like be part of a huge company and spend tons of money and then charge a huge amount for their software, or have free downloads from Two Cows or some other site where you're giving away your apps and just clunking away and making things. And Apple kind of came in and said, you know what, we want people to make, we're not even going to call them applications. Even calling them apps was like this weird idea. And yet suddenly people are saying, oh yeah, I'll throw down 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 bucks on an app if it does what I want it to. And the way things work with Microsoft right now, they aren't in that game. They don't really have a good way of doing that. And I think that's the other thing that kind of the Metro UI and the Windows 8 platform is going to bring, is the ability for people to say, yeah, we're going to kind of create encapsulated programs that people are kind of comfortable buying again. And I think that's going to make a little difference too. And it sounds like Media Center is going to be one of those things. It's going to be one of those things where you go in and say, yeah, I'm going to buy it through the Microsoft Marketplace for who knows how much. Hopefully it's not more than 10, 15 bucks. And then you'll be able to install that on your systems. But I think that model of exciting developers by allowing them to make some money off of their programs is also going to develop some increased creativity.
Yeah. Well, it's PC round two. So as we head into tablets, we really were going through some of the same growing pains we went through 15 years ago in the PC, 20 years ago, and the PC came on board, and it's kind of a wild, wild west of development again, as everybody's scrambling to have their app. There's a million apps out there. I mean, remember you used to go into Best Buy, and there were three walls full of software titles that you could purchase there, and now you go and it's a row, right? And it's all gone. You know, everything's gone. Gone into the store, so to speak. And yet, there's a million apps. Everybody's creating an app. I mean, how many flashlight apps or fart apps do you need? Eventually, those will go away and the really good ones should rise. Right. And I see the advent in that. Okay. Well, Andrew, any other – Gary had his piece and Chris had his. Any other thoughts on that? I want to move on to an Android topic for the last part of the show. Anything else?
No, I don't use Media Center, so I can't contribute to the RAM.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's some exciting times ahead, and certainly we've got some good stuff to talk about. This keeps the podcast alive, at least for the next year, as Microsoft is going to release. I mean, 2012 is going to be a great year for new stuff on Windows, and we're going to see a real beta, I think, come in June. So the first week of June, we see some. We see something, so get ready, get your equipment ready, get the ISOs ready to download, and get
those installed.
I don't think
it's going to be much different.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give it a shot. Gary's showing his laptop that's all ready to go. Yeah, I'm not sure, Chris, from a functionality standpoint, it's going to be all that much different, but it'll be fun to get the new one. And then we've got a lot of changes coming around the Microsoft ecosystem as they move to Windows 8 in the fall, and it's here. And I still think we're going to have a lot of people staying on Windows 7 for a long time, but there's some cool stuff to come up and talk about.
Yeah, I'm going to try it on my Asus, my little Asus netbook tablet.
Yeah,
cool.
You know, that's the one that folds into a tablet, and I'm running Windows 7 on it now. So, yeah, when I get a free minute, I'll just pop Windows 8 on there and see how it goes.
Yeah, I think, Gary, give it a couple days once you get it on there. Don't rush to judgment.
I don't like it on the desktop. It works okay, but it just seems like it's. I don't know. Why do I need to go through three extra steps to get where I was when I had Windows 7? I mean, it's just. I don't know. The interface doesn't do anything for me on the desktop. It's just more difficult, more steps, more clicks to get to what I need to do.
Right on.
And then when I need to go back and get something else, I got to go back out to this tile thing.
So here's what you do is you have Hawaii 5.0 call you. No, you, here's what you do. Put the Windows 8 on there and then resist the urge to go to the desktop, right? Stay on the tile screen, stay on the Metro.
Yeah. I'm going to try that on the tablet.
Yeah. Just try that. Give it a shot. Give it a couple days. See how it goes. So, last thing I want to talk about. We need to wrap this up fairly quick because we're going to be over time here. But Samsung released, I think, last night in London, their new Galaxy S3. And I hope you guys had a chance to look at some of the features that are coming with this. I knew Andrew was going to make this part of his feature, but let me just roll through some of the things that they talked about when they released it. And, you know, I'm a Galaxy S2 guy. I love my phone. It's the first phone that I've wanted to actually keep and not, not after 6 months give it back or wish I had a better phone. Even though new phones are coming out, I'm happy with my phone. So I love the X2. But here's what's coming on the S3 that's coming out. So 4.8 inch screen, which is nice, a little improvement over a little bit bigger. It's only about 8.6 millimeters thick and just weighs 133 grams, so it's 133 paper clips. Pretty light from that perspective. Has some new software coming out for facial recognition, so this is kind of interesting and something I like. The display won't go to sleep if you're reading it, so it keeps track that your face is looking at the screen. You know, I've done this sometimes where I have an article or something I'm looking at, and I've got the power features set to aggressive, and the thing goes, you know, just...
Or you're showing someone a picture and they're like, oh, where'd it go? Or they keep tapping on it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So a little bit better, where it says, hey, if I have a face, if I can find a face somewhere in the area, chances are somebody's looking at this thing, which I think is pretty cool. And of course, that adds to some security feature, I think, which eventually becoming is it'll do facial recognition. It's no, it's you, and it'll unlock, which would be pretty nice. If you're texting someone and decide to call them instead, just hold up the phone and it automatically calls. That's genius.
Nice. I mean,
just I don't want to send a text. I'm actually going to call. Nobody calls anymore, though. I don't. Everybody texts, but okay, it'll do that. So the facial recognition software inside it will automatically tag your photos, so no having to upload it to Facebook or whatever and then tag those photos individually. Now, I probably won't work with Facebook integration, but at least there'll be some metadata in the pictures that tell you who those people are in the photos, and I'm sure you'll have to integrate that with your contact.
I think they were saying if it was in your contacts, if it was already a person in your contacts, that it would automatically tag them and potentially share it with that contact. So that person would say, this person just took a picture of you, so you don't have to spend the time to go through Facebook. And
Yeah.
So it's an interesting idea.
Very cool.
It's nice.
So reminiscent of the old HP, the Palm days, you can bump two phones together and they'll share information.
Wasn't there an app on iOS called Bump?
Yeah, yep. I don't know.
Yeah,
it also works with Android too.
When Does I first it? Started residency, everyone was like, "Hey, do you want a bump?" And I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about."
So. that could be interpreted so many ways.
Oh, maybe I was getting propositioned. I don't know, but
and then yeah. Which isn't always a bad thing. Yeah. The and then there's, of course, this is Apple-esque. You can beam content to your TV if you buy an optional HDMI dongle for it. So again, that's a lot like the iPhone. If you want to send content to your TV, you can do it that way. And then the last one I had is you can take several photos at once using burst mode. The phone will automatically detect your best photo and save it. Which I thought was fairly interesting, you know, that. So instead of, because, you know, if you get, say, you got a group picture, right? And you're, no, maybe not. So
I think that's going to be just about as good as that Microsoft photo app where you take 10 pictures and then it stitches their heads on each other, but then you end up with like three eyes and like an ear on your neck. And
yes.
Didn't work at all like the commercial said.
No, to the cloud, right? To the cloud. Yeah. Didn't that didn't kind of... Andrew, did you see anything else on that phone that you wanted to highlight as it comes? Looks like those seemed like minor upgrades.
Yeah, it's got some nice stuff in it. Of course, it's running Ice Cream Sandwich. Which is the latest and greatest. I think it's running 4.04 of Android. It has got a quad-core processor in it, so it's got the 1.4 gig quad-core Exynos processor, which apparently runs 65% faster than the processor in the Galaxy S2.
Oh, 65%?
65%.
Nice. How hot is it? That's the question.
Well, don't put it in your shorts pocket because you know, yes. you might cook bits that you don't want to.
Put it in your pants and call yourself.
Yeah, that's right. But it does come in 16, 32, and 64 gig pre-configured storage as well, which is kind of neat.
So to go on tap.
Yeah. So they're sort of taking on Apple head on with their configuration sizing, and expandable at the same time, which is nice.
That's SD.
Built-in plus SD.
Built-in plus top. SD, okay.
Yeah,
Samsung is definitely a player in the market. I mean, they are definitely out. I think they're out on the cutting edge of having some of the best functional phones that are meeting market demands.
Yeah. And look, I think from my perspective, I've been holding off for a long time. I think this is probably going to be my next one now. Once they hit the market and drop a little bit in price.
Did they give a retail? Is it going to be $299 or $399 or
outright retail in Australia for the 16 gig is going to be $799. Awesome. Which is fairly consistent with release pricing for a new phone. So the Galaxy Nexus, the current Galaxy Nexus was that much when it was released, and you can pick them up for $400 now. So.
But you'll buy it subsidized, right? Or will you buy it outright?
I'll probably buy it outright.
Okay.
And when you buy your Galaxy S3, you also get 50 gigabytes of Dropbox storage for two years.
Dropbox?
Yeah. That's what it says, yeah.
Wow.
Preloaded S3 Samsung's partnerships gives owners 50 gigabytes of storage of 2 years, double what HTC's offering is.
Wow. Wow, we come full circle, right?
Yeah.
Back to Dropbox, 50 gig. Wow. Well, that's a similar offer that HP gave on Box.net or Box.com when they released the touchpad. Every touchpad user got 50 gig. So, Andrew, you signed up for that, and so did I. I think we took advantage of that. And I forget that I've got 50 gig over there. I probably need to take advantage. It's horrible integration right now, but I forget that it's over there. Chris, you're still a Windows Phone guy. When's your contract up, and are you going to upgrade to the Lumia?
So I'm going to make a little confession here.
Hardcore window guys.
Back off. I love my Windows Phone. I have been very intrigued by the Lumia 900 and the success of the Lumia 900. And so my contract is not up until January. And so I went into one of the local stores. I was just driving by and said, all right, I'm going to go in and see if this guy knows anything about it. And maybe he won't know what he's doing, and he'll just like sell me one for $20 or something. And I walked in, and he actually knew the product. He knew Windows Phone. He knew what the deals were. He knew about the $100 Nokia credit, like all of this stuff. And I was like, is there anything I can do to upgrade to that without buying the thing full price? And he said, well, you'd have to start like get another line and then like swap out the SIM cards. And I'm like, I'm not paying for a whole other line just to get a phone early. So I very much like my phone still. There was just that little yearning for the latest and greatest. And I think the biggest thing is, I don't know that 2 years for geeks like us is a fair amount of time to expect us to wait for the next phone. Because, you know, after like a year or so, even though I still like the device I have, it's like, ooh, what else is out there?
I agree with you.
It'd be nice if we could pay like maybe $5 a month extra or something and then have like anytime upgrade or something. But
well, Sprint had a nice deal going on here in the United States for a while. If you were a Premier customer, you could upgrade every 12 months. And one line on your plan for 12 months. Now, I've been a Sprint customer for 15 years.
Yeah.
And so I was in that program, and it was great. And I would always upgrade mine, and unfortunately, everybody else in the family had to wait for 2 years for theirs. But they have done away with that program. You no longer, and I think
I'm
it's sure 20.
Too much. Yeah,
Gary, you're a Sprint customer too. Is it 20 months, 22 months? I think is the standard upgrade.
Yeah,
now?
I think it's 22 because I was calculating Christian's was due to expire, and then they came in early, so it must be 22.
But there's some sideways deal with iPhones, right? Where you can upgrade those after, was it a year or 14 months or something? It's really early. And they don't offer that to anybody else, to any other phones. So,
I think though you don't. It's not. I still think it's a couple $100 if you do it.
It is. Yeah. But that being said, if I could at this point, if I could drop $150, $200 on a Lumia, I would probably do that at this point. But I'm not going to spend $450 or $400 on it. Right. So I guess that's just
But assuming no other phones come out like the Lumia, that's your phone.
That'd be the next phone. What I'm actually excited about that Nokia's working on, they've got these PureView cameras. I don't know if you've heard about these or not, but they've got a newer sensor technology where they're capturing these 41 megapixel images on a really compact little device. It's about three times the thickness of a normal cell phone, and they're releasing their first version of it with Symbian. And it's a really odd shape. It's sort of like there's a big little hump sticking out of the back of the phone. I know it sounds ridiculous. The pictures are amazing. You would use this as a high quality phone or as a high quality camera. And so I don't know. I may end up with a hump phone in 6 months if they come out with one. So so
that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, us geeks and our phones. That's right.
That's right.
The moral of the story. Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, we've come to the end of another podcast, and the time always goes by so fast. Some great discussion, and certainly we'll have to brand this the Windows 8 Cloud Storage Podcast or something like that. I'm sure, Andrew, you'll have fun coming up with the show notes to get this pulled off. I will remind folks that we do broadcast live every Thursday night. We change the time 8 p.m. Central. 9 p.m. Eastern, and that would be 6 o'clock there on the West Coast. If you're out there, you can join us live. Just come out to theaverageguy.tv/live and watch the show. If you're listening to it for the first time and you've downloaded or you're listening to it on Stitcher or one of the other streaming podcast stuff, head over to theaverageguy.tv. We do have ways you can download it and get it as soon as we put it out. Usually, Andrew and I release the podcast on Saturday mornings here in the U.S. Saturday evening or Sunday morning there in Australia. And speak of the heir apparent, is that Christian behind you, Gary?
Yeah,
it's
him.
You just froze up. So there's the heir apparent, Christian, behind him. Christian, how you doing? And we will do this all again next Thursday. Chris, great to always have you in the podcast. It's good to have you back. Congratulations on your new assignment in a year or so to Seattle, and we'll probably have you on 4, 5, or 6 more podcasts between now and then. And then get to have your podcast from the West Coast. How cool that!
Yeah, that'll be fun. We'll have to make that something different. I don't know. So,
yeah. Well, it's always been good. You know, I've been in your apartment there, and it's always good to see the bike hanging on the wall. So that's how I know I'm in the Lux apartment.
I'll hopefully hang it on my wall in Seattle
with
too.
The bike. So. Yep. Gary, great to have you as well. And thanks for filling in Christian's absence. And I'm sure will we have Christian back next week?
Next week, you're going to be here? He says he should be.
All right, good. We'll have
He's
Christian
got
back.
AP exams, so we'll see how much time he has.
Summer's coming up. And then I know in June, Christian's on his way to Virginia, and we'll get him broadcasting live from close to Langley, and he'll have a summer internship. That'll be very cool. So, Christian, looking forward to having you as well. Andrew, it's always good to have you, and thanks for taking your lunch hour to come in and join us all the way from Melbourne. Yeah, good to have you, and thanks for doing the show notes this week. All right, that'll do it for another episode of the Home Tech Podcast. We'll be back with 72 next week. Everybody have a great evening and a good weekend.
Night all.
Okay.
Chris, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a while.
I'm pretty good. I'm more excited now that I know where life's taking me. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's good. And I've been real busy in the hospital the last month, but now they've switched me over to a very easy rotation. So things are not so bad right now.
Good.
Nice.
Do you have a date?
To move?
Yeah.
Like 14 months.
Oh.
It's a long way out. So
oh, good.
Yeah, I've got to resist the urge to like live my life on Craigslist looking for places to live. So
yeah, it's going to be a while, isn't it?
I'm already looking a little bit, and I'm like, oh my God, it's expensive out there too. So we can announce on the show. You can send donations to chrislux@paypal.com.
So, I don't think anybody's going to feel sorry for you.
No, probably not. Probably not.
Okay, we got another couple minutes here. We're actually early. Imagine that. We are early for the show.
No.
14 months. So this next summer.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yep. So in the meantime, just got to plug away at St. Louis and get all my stuff in order and probably...
Does that create a little weirdness in that you really don't want to settle now anything? You don't want to make anything in St. Louis permanent, right? I mean...
Well, yeah. I mean... I don't know. It doesn't help for the dating scene very well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're like, hi, you're beautiful. Are you mobile? You know, I don't know how that goes over.
Awesome.
I've never asked a girl that before.
I never asked if she was mobile or not. So
Market interpreted the wrong way.
After I did my after I did my genome testing and I found out that I was like 50% more caveman than the average person, I was like, oh, I got to use that in a bar. Like, I got to go and be like, you ever dated a Neanderthal before? And if she says no, I think I'm justified in clubbing her and, like, dragging her up by her hair.
Yeah, well, if I got a deal for you.
Yeah. So,
Gary, can we do one more sound check with you?
Yeah, sure.
Can you tap your mic for me? I'm getting really bad upload quality from you.
Do you want me to hang up and reconnect?
Yeah, let's try. Let's give him another shot at life.
Have any of you guys gotten your genome sequenced?
No, I should do that. Although they probably, I would probably find out that I'm, you know, like something
Lady
weird.
Jack the Ripper or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone I tell, everyone I work with tells me I'm only one swing out of the tree, so I don't need to prove it genetically.
I don't know, Andrew. I'm sure you have a lot of Neanderthal in you, too.